Because we're held here against our will. That's all the reason I need. But you'll never have it half as good as we do here, Teresa almost shouted. And how can you just turn your back on helping the world?
For the first time since they'd met, Minho looked like maybe he didn't like them so much.
I guess we have different philosophies, he said. If you don't get it, you don't get it. You don't take away my freedom without asking first.
Sorry we got off to a rough start, Gally interjected. I guess I'm just nervous being down here. But I promise you guys, this can work.
He looked around at the group then and added,
Anyone coming with us?
His words were met with graveyard silence.
When?
Newt asked, breaking the quiet. Minho and Gally answered at the same time.
Tomorrow night.
Chapter 26 226.11.14 3:17 a.m. They came for Thomas hours before dawn. Randall, Dr. Levitt, and Ramirez. The Three Musketeers. Thomas knew, despite his grogginess, that the three of them coming together meant that something really bad had happened, or was about to happen. He was on his feet seconds after they shook him awake.
"What's going on?" he asked.
"I have an inkling you know very well what's going on," Randall replied, sharp and loud in the quiet of the night. "And that's why you're coming with us right now. We need your help."
Thomas started to ask another question, but Dr. Levitt cut him off immediately.
"Come on, Thomas. Everything will be okay. Just do as you're told." "Quickly now!"
Ramirez added, the first time Thomas had ever heard the chief of security speak. The three men escorted Thomas through the building, often grabbing his arm at a turn in the hallway or getting off the elevator, even though he didn't need it. They weren't rough with him, but they were clearly in a hurry. They stopped when they reached a heavily fortified door. Ramirez pressed his fingerprint to a glass panel and said his name. The door opened. Randall gave Thomas a little nudge to go through. Thomas wanted answers, but he decided to suck it up and remain quiet. Randall was being nicer than he had the night of the crank pits, and Thomas didn't want to push him past some boundary he wasn't yet willing to cross. Thomas looked around the room he'd stepped into. It was new to him, what looked to be a control center for security. There was a large wall full of monitors showing everything from the medical rooms to dorms to progress on the maze construction. Oddly, the video feeds for the maze moved around skittishly, as if their cameras had been strapped to the backs of very angry cats. Nestled in the middle of the room, and facing the monitors, was a deck of equipment fitted out with more display screens and several chairs perched behind it. Two guards sat there now, their gazes fixed on a monitor to the right side of the wall. Thomas looked closer and felt his heart drop. It showed Minho in a small room, strapped to a chair, the ropes digging into his skin, his face bloodied and bruised. He stared straight at the camera, unwavering, and his look of resolve made Thomas feel a little proud and a little ashamed. He hadn't wanted Minho to run and doubted he'd actually try.
"Hurts to say this," Randall said, "but it looks like your friend didn't learn from his last attempt to go outside. I guess we were too easy on him, on everyone. Now we have no choice but to step things up. Don't you agree?"
Thomas stared at Minho. Minho stared back. Could it be possible there was a two-way camera? Thomas suddenly felt self-conscious.
"Silence is probably not your best option right now," Dr. Levitt said. "Sit down and we'll talk. People like Minho and Gally, people who think they're above the effort to help us here, have to be dealt with. Hopefully you can learn something by watching."
Ramirez put a hand on Thomas's shoulder and gently helped him find a seat between the two guards.
"You're excused now," Randall said.
For one split second, Thomas thought Randall meant him, which would have been awfully strange since they'd just had him sit down. but it quickly became clear he was wrong when the guards got up and left. Ramirez took the chair to Thomas's left, Dr. Levitt the one to his right. Randall stepped into the space between the controls and the monitors, then clasped his hands behind his back, as if he were about to give a lecture.
"Thomas," he began, "let's be honest here. You know we've been watching you and your friends gather at night, correct? You might be young, but you're way too smart to think you were getting around us somehow."
Thomas opened his mouth, then closed it. He'd at least hoped they were outsmarting them. He didn't know why they'd let them continue to gather, but as he thought about it, he realized it had been wishful thinking. He nodded. Randall placed his hands on the outer edge of the control deck and leaned forward, closer to Thomas.
"Listen," the man said. "We're not here to beat you up over Mino's mistake. If anything, we were able to see that most of you tried to talk him out of it. But there are some valuable lessons to be learned from all this, and we're going to take advantage of the situation."
Thomas wished desperately that the guy would make his point already.
"You are going to sit with us and watch how we're going to teach Min-Ho his lesson. We need witnesses, to be frank. We need the word to get around. We can't let something like this ever happen again. Our subjects need to know that actions have consequences."
"What are you going to do to him?"
Thomas shouted, really scared for his friend. Randall flinched at the sudden loud noise, then continued as if he hadn't heard the question.
"After this is done, we'll bring in Teresa and show her. Same for Aris and Rachel over in the control room for Group B. But we wanted you all to be alone on this. All reactions your own and not influenced by friends." "It's also a big step in another way," Dr. Levitt added. "The maze trials will be only a year or two from now, based on our current pace. And this," he gestured around the room, "this is something you're going to see a lot of once we put the first batch of subjects into the mazes. So look at this little exercise as practice. Sound good?"
Thomas stayed quiet. Sometimes they could be so condescending.
"Thomas? Sound good?"
Levitt repeated. Thomas felt a rage so strong he could barely contain it. Like a fire starving for oxygen. He didn't understand how, but somehow he kept it all in.
"Sounds good," he muttered.
Randall pointed to a different screen from the one showing Min-Ho. In the new one, Thomas could see an oval container of some sort. It had a seam along one side and hinges on the other. It looked like the coffin for a fat, very wealthy alien.
"What's that?"
Thomas asked, falling right into their trap. Curiosity often won when it came to him.
"Those are pods," Randall replied. "Pods for a biomechanical creature that the military was able to help us design. At the moment, we're calling them Grievers. They're still in the early stages of development, but huge progress was made with this last round. I think we're just two or more modifications away from having our perfect maze monster."
Thomas was so taken aback by the seemingly simple statement that he could imagine the ridiculous look that must be on his face. He closed his mouth and forced himself to blink a few times.
"Not what you were expecting?" Randall asked.
I don't... expecting?"
He was at a loss for words.
"What are you even talking about? Biomechanical creatures, monsters in the maze. What did you call them? Grievers?"
Ramirez spoke up.
"You'll learn all the details soon enough. Honestly, we had no intention of sharing this with you for a while yet, but this opportunity arose and, well, I will say, as one who's been on the committee leading the development of these living weapons, that they're an achievement by any standard."
"In short," Randall added, "if we're going to understand how the Muni's brains function despite being inflicted with the flare, we have to be able to stimulate in them
every kind of feeling and brain activity known to humans. Once we start the maze trials, these creatures will help with that in a big way. You should see the psych reports. Very interesting.
Thomas felt like a dark shadow had passed over him. Something that sucked the life out of the air, and the air from his lungs. Everything these men were telling him, it was all feeling worse by the moment.
"Let's get on with it," Randall said. He reached over and pressed something. "Go ahead, Alice. Open the pod."
Thomas watched as the seam alongside the oval pod split open. Jets of steam hissed from the opening, obscuring any clear view of the pod itself. Swirling, eddying mists filled the room on the screen. Thomas glanced over at the screen showing Minho really fast, and the true horror of what was about to happen became evident. Minho had finally broken his gaze and was looking anxiously to his right. Tendrils of fog slid along the floor from that side of the screen. Thomas stood up, his skin now cold. Minho was in the same room as that opening pod. Chapter 27 226.11.14 5:52 a.m.
"Stop!" Thomas yelled. "Stop that thing!"
His imagination had run wild, trying to picture what terrible thing was about to reveal itself.
"I get the point, okay?"
"Sit down!"
Ramirez yelled from behind Thomas, and the man grabbed both Thomas's shoulders and slammed him back down into his seat. Thomas had no idea when the man had moved from his chair. Randall turned away from the mist-filled screen.
"If we don't act on our threats," he said, "then how will we ever have control in this experiment? If we let people escape, or try to, with no consequences, what does that tell the other subjects? Minho made his choice. Now things have to play out the way they're supposed to."
"Please,"
Thomas whispered, feeling the fight drain out of him. Minho, tough, reckless, always joking Minho, had a look of such terror on his face that Thomas couldn't bear to watch anymore. He turned his attention to the pod. The mist had dissipated enough to reveal the container, its two halves resting on the floor. Thomas stared mutely as something began to climb out. Whatever he had expected, he never could have dreamed up what he saw next. It was impossible to tell its shape. The creature was wet and glistening, with patches of hair covering parts of its surface. But there was metal, too, flashes of steel appendages and sharp discs protruding from the quivering mass. Thomas watched the hideous creature push itself over the lip of the container and crash down to the floor, revealing a slug-like body about the size of a small cow. He shuddered, watching the abomination maneuver. He looked back at Minho, saw the boy thrashing against his restraints, screaming with no sound. The fog had washed over him. It was lingering in the background, melting toward the ceiling. Thomas lost every bit of his restraint.
"Stop that thing!"
he yelled, standing up. Ramirez was there instantly, pushing him down again.
"You can't do this!"
Randall glanced over his shoulder. He'd been watching Minho intently and gave Thomas a tired expression.
"We have no choice," the man said simply.
"Teresa!"
he screamed in his mind.
"You have to do something! They've got Minho tied up in a chair and this thing, this monster, is about to attack him!"
The words inside his mind felt strange this time, hollow. It felt like some invisible barrier was up, and everything he said was bouncing back at him.
"Of course," he thought. "Of course, Wicked can turn it off. They can do whatever the hell they want."
Minho continued to struggle and scream. He managed to move his chair, sliding it back until he hit the wall farthest from the Griever. On the left side of the screen, something flashed into view. A blob with spikes dragging it along the ground. Right before it ran into Minho, it stopped. The metal spikes receded into its skin, and the creature flattened out. Thomas was desperate now, seeing one of his few friends on the verge of serious damage, possibly even death.
"Randall," he begged, "listen to me. Please, just stop that thing. Just stop it. Just hear me out. Let me talk. And then if you don't change your mind, you can start it again. Please."
Part of the creature's body was rising now, and several lengths of metal extended where the spikes had been. They were solid, covered in deadly objects, blades and saws and claws that snapped open and closed. Thomas watched, nearly in tears, as very slowly the weapons extended toward Minho's body. Thomas tried to take a calmer approach. He sucked in a breath.
"Randall, please. Minho is too valuable for this. If you don't stop that thing, I'm not helping you anymore. With anything. I don't care what you guys do to me."
The creature had risen on its hindquarters, and it now stood several feet higher than Minho's head. The metal arms that had extended from its skin wrapped around Minho, encircling him, trapping him against the wall he'd backed into.
"Randall,"
Thomas said, fighting to keep calm.
"Go get Dr. Page, the Sykes, go get the Chancellor, go get all of them. They need me, and they need Minho. He has too much potential to help your trial to waste him here."
The creature lifted its saw appendage, and the blade spun to life, the arm inching closer to Minho's forehead. He'd already pressed his head back against the wall. Thomas watched as his friend's face now contorted in pure fear.
"Last chance," Thomas yelled. "If he dies, I might as well—"
He cut off abruptly when Randall pressed the call button again.
"Pause,"
he commanded, a little urgently, as if he'd let it go too far, too late to stop it. The creature froze, and Thomas let out a huge, shuddering breath. He slumped back down into his seat and dropped his head into his hands. It took everything he had not to burst into tears.
"Look at him, please," Randall said quietly. "Look at the screen."
Thomas raised his head and focused on Minho's display.
"You see that?" Randall asked.
He was also watching Minho. The creature was draped over the boy almost like a blanket.
"Did I not tell you that we're almost there? We've almost perfected the greatest soldier."
Thomas didn't see anything besides his friend, literally inches from death, and a man who seemed to have lost his grip on reality, if he'd ever had it in the first place.
"I think this goes without saying," Randall continued, his voice still imbued with a sense of awe. "I need you to never forget what you've seen here today. I need you to understand the power and the danger of these creatures. The pattern of your empathy could end up being one of the biggest pieces of our puzzle."
Thomas found it hard to focus on the man's words. All he could do was stare at Minho and his sweat-streaked face. The blade, even though it had stopped inching forward, still spun as fast as ever. Thomas found it hard to breathe, knowing it would only take one word from Randall to end Minho's life. The man pressed his magic button again and said,
"Okay, go ahead and call it back."
Seconds later, the metal arms of the Griever withdrew, folding away from Minho and retracting into the moist, fatty body. The Griever seemed to melt into a fat slab of flesh on the floor, then wrapped itself into a rounded ball, traction spikes extending. Finally, it pulled itself end over end until it had rolled out of sight on the screen. Thomas turned his attention to the other screen, and the creature appeared, spinning until it reached the pod, retracted its spikes, and oozed its way back inside. The pod hatch was closing even before the creature had disappeared into its home. A few seconds and a hiss of steam later, the pod closed, and all went still. Thomas looked back at Minho, hoping to see that some piece of his friend's rebellious nature had returned to him. But not this time. Minho's head hung low, and his body shook with sobs. Thomas just dropped his own head sadly. He was at a complete loss trying to understand what he'd just watched.
"Let's get you back to your room," Randall said. "We still have three more subjects to witness what you just saw. If I were you, I'd write down anything of importance you learned today."
Thomas had missed something.
"Wait, what?"
Randall ignored him.
"You do realize that we never would have let the Griever hurt Minho, much less kill him. You're smart enough to know that, right? We only want everyone to learn a valuable lesson. The rules must be followed. Going outside, much less leaving the wicked compound. Now you know the consequences."
"But..."
Thomas was so shaken, he couldn't put together the question he wanted to ask. Dr. Levitt spoke up.
"Don't worry about your reaction today, Thomas. It was pretty close to what we expected. And it's not lost on us the passion you threw into trying to save your friend. I tell you what, the psychs are going to have a field day with this one. Lots of data to analyze."
Thomas finally realized what the man was saying.
"What do you mean? You have three others to show. This..."
He pointed to all the screens in front of him, the control deck, the ceiling above.
"You do mean a recording of it, right?"
The next half-second seemed to stretch out forever.
"Please, please, please," he thought. "Tell me that, yes, you recorded it."
"I'm sorry to say the answer is no," Randall replied. "It's more effective if Minho goes through it again." He sighed. "On so many levels, Thomas."
Chapter 28 228.4.3 7 o'clock a.m. Thomas reached over, hit snooze on his alarm clock, and dropped his arm over the side of his bed. He hated the wake-up on days after a maintenance room rendezvous, possibly hated that alarm more than a house full of cranks. Hungry cranks. But he did relish those 10 minutes that followed hitting snooze before the alarm blared again. It was like a little bonus to himself every morning. He curled back into a ball, content if just for a moment. He hadn't seen Minho for over a year, even though he'd survived the punishment with the Griever. Well, at least physically. Albie said that mentally, emotionally, Minho was different. He wasn't as talkative or reckless, and he certainly never mentioned the word escape again. The passing of time can certainly heal a lot of wounds, but the way Albie described their mutual friend, Minho would need about 20 more years. The other members of their maintenance room clan met once a week. Everyone but Minho. He hadn't shown up once since the fateful day, and Newt said their friend wouldn't even consider it. He was a shell of the person they'd all gotten to know. It made Thomas incredibly sad. He'd really liked Minho, and everything about their situation seemed so unfair. Who could blame him for reacting this way after the horror show Wicked called his punishment? Thomas believed in the cure, at least he told himself he did. But Wicked treating them like lab rats, sometimes that turned his sadness into anger. Often he'd have to kneel by his bed and pound on the mattress with both fists until he collapsed from exhaustion. He wanted it all to be over, a cure in hand, and he did his best to stay positive in that regard. Dr. Page always said the data was plentiful and rolling in. Maybe, just maybe, the end was in sight, no matter how distant the horizon. He and Teresa were almost done with the maze, just slightly behind the pace of Group B, from what they'd been told. But that was just it. Thomas had a harder and harder time believing them. Wicked continued to isolate him and Teresa, so he relied on the latest gossip from Albie, Newt, and his most plentiful source, Chuck. That kid had a brain like a sponge, soaking in every little comment he ever heard or overheard. They might tease him without mercy, but when Chuck spoke, people listened. Thomas's daily 10 minutes of morning bliss ended in a cacophony of klaxon sounds when his alarm went off again. He hated it more than solar flares. Dr. Page showed up with breakfast right on time. How long had he known this woman? Longer than his own mom, for sure. By years. And today, he could read something different in her manner, a difference in her smile, a pain behind the bright intelligence her eyes always showed. He wanted to ask her what was wrong, but their relationship had never quite recovered after what Wicked had done to Minho. Still, of all the people who worked there, in whatever capacity, Dr. Page was the one he liked most, and he had to fight to keep any kind of wall between them. Though it was a very thin wall, and the mortar holding it together had begun to crumble.
"How are we today?"
she asked him once she'd set the breakfast on his desk. "Work day today, right?" Thomas nodded, then sat down to eat. Normally, they talked a little about how tests were going, his classes, progress on the mazes, etc. But before Thomas could take one bite of his eggs, Dr. Page was headed for the door. She'd just opened it and was about to step into the hallway when Thomas stopped her.
"Hey," he said, "can you come back in for a second?"
She paused, let out a heavy sigh. But then she closed the door and came back to the desk, took the other chair. She looked at him with sad eyes. Thomas couldn't help himself. Curiosity always won.
"I wasn't going to ask," he said, "but is there something wrong?"
For a long moment he was scared. What if one of his friends had died? Not Teresa, though. He would definitely have felt her absence, or her last moments. He would have had some clue.
"Thomas," Dr. Page began.
She looked around the room as if she might literally find words posted on the walls.
"We're getting very close to sending subjects into the mazes."
She let out a little laugh and met his eyes again.
"Well,
you would know that better than anyone.
How is your work going in there?"
She meant his and Teresa's efforts in the maze cavern.
"It's going fine. Pretty fun. I don't know." "You sound less than enthused."
"It's just been hard for me to get over some things. There are secrets. Things you've been keeping from us. Some of it just doesn't seem right. And people could be nicer. Like Randall. Like Ramirez. Dr. Levitt." It felt good to get some of this off his chest. She crossed her legs and gave him a look of sincere concern.
"I don't know if you'll believe this, Thomas, but I've struggled with these very things myself.
I could offer you excuses, but I'm guessing that's not what you want to hear." Thomas shook his head.
"Even the fact that you call us subjects, I mean, we're human, not a bunch of mice."
His voice had gotten a little firmer, but Paige kept her cool, nodding as if she understood completely.
"I think it boils down to two things," she said.
"First, even though everything we're doing at the moment is leading to the maze trials, that doesn't mean that the Sykes haven't been looking for every opportunity to seek out kill zone patterns. Every second of every day matters, as I'm sure you understand. Just in the time we've spoken this morning, how many hundreds or thousands of people have caught the flare out there in the world? How many have died?"
"So your solution is take it out on kids?"
Thomas asked, even though he knew it was a stupid thing to say. These people had saved them from almost certain death. Anger flashed across Dr. Page's face.
"This is a harsh, brutal virus that needs to be dealt with by using harsh and brutal will, Thomas. If you would just stop thinking about how hard things are for you. You have no idea."
She faltered, and a look of regret shadowed her face.
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The truth is just too damn hard to talk about."
She stood up, her eyes moist with tears. She appeared to be on the verge of saying something else, but then she turned her back to him and left the room, closing the door gently behind her. Chapter 29 2:28.4.3 8:04 a.m. Thomas had struck a nerve. He'd had her talking more honestly than ever before, and he wasn't going to waste the opportunity, no matter how much her sudden display of emotion surprised him. He got up and went after her. She was walking briskly down the hall, almost jogging, so he had to run to catch up. He grabbed her arm to stop her. She wrenched away from him, took a step back until she met the wall. Breathing heavily, she looked at him with something like disgust. Her eyes flared with a moment of anger. But then everything melted away, and she was back to the same old Dr. Page he'd always known. Caring, kind Dr. Page. Although the sadness painted over her features almost made Thomas apologize and go back to his room.
"What's going on?" he asked. "What aren't you telling me?"
When she just shook her head, he kept at it.
"Every day I go out there and make your gigantic maze a little closer to test ready. I don't whine or complain, I just do it. I work my butt off, and so does Teresa. We both know what the stakes are."
Dr. Page nodded.
"Yes, you're right. I'm sorry." "But that's exactly what I'm talking about," he continued. "Because we've had to grow up fast, we deserve to be treated like adults. Not like babies, not like mice in a cage, not like idiots. We all want the same thing. Why can't we be treated like partners instead of subjects? Minho, Albie, Newt, everyone I know in here would be a lot more cooperative if you'd just show a little respect."
Dr. Page had recovered from whatever had caught her off guard. She now stood tall and serene as ever, arms folded, eyes sharp and focused on him.
"Listen to me. Back in your room, I told you it boiled down to two issues. First, some of these episodes of what you call harshness have actually been planned out by the psychs. They are ways to stimulate brain patterns before we get to the big tests inside the mazes. Okay?"
"No, not okay." Thomas didn't like it, though at least it was an explanation.
"Fine. And the second thing? These people are survivors, Thomas. I know you were young, terribly young, but surely you remember the awful state of the world after the virus spread and reached us out here. Things weren't supposed to..."
She paused, and something in her eyes told Thomas that she'd said something she hadn't meant to.
"But my point, the world became a place of horror and death and madness. By nature, by definition, anyone who survived those first waves of sheer terror had to be a little hardened, tougher than normal. It's what helped them survive. The weak, they either died or will soon."
Thomas, a little stunned by her flurry of words, didn't know what to say.
"So yes," she continued, "most of the people here aren't the nicest you'll ever meet. They don't have the time or the inclination to worry about feelings, okay? They've seen the depths of hell out there in the world, and they're ready to do anything and everything possible to find a cure and stop those horrors. And you're just going to have to accept that."
"Okay," Thomas said, overwhelmed by all he'd just heard. Her impassioned speech had drained him of any desire to pursue the argument.
"Now buck up and get to work," Dr. Page said.
The corner of her mouth twitched in a semi-smile, which he figured was the best he could ask for that morning.
"Will do,"
he replied, the words as sullen as he could make them. Thomas walked along the corridors of the maze, proud of the progress they'd made over the last few months. He couldn't take much credit for the majestic walls themselves, the cracked gray stone, the ivy that crawled like veins across their surfaces, the sheer magnitude of it all. Especially the advanced level of engineering that went into the moving walls, the changing configurations of the maze itself. It was cool to watch, but he had no idea how it worked. The engineers weren't the friendliest folk in the world, and were too busy to get much information out of. But so many of the finer details around him, the little things that really made the place come alive and feel real, were due to his and Teresa's tireless efforts. He was thinking about all they'd done as he turned a corner and headed down a long stretch of the labyrinth. Even the doctors, psychs, and technicians of Wicked were surprised at how valuable the telepathy had ended up being. Not only could Thomas and Teresa instantly communicate, they'd become much better at sensing the other's feelings, anticipating their thoughts, understanding things that were impossible to articulate. No one really believed him when he tried to explain it, so he'd stopped trying a long time ago.
"You there yet?"
Teresa asked him from the control center.
"Give me a second," he responded. "I'm just enjoying our handiwork."
He looked up at the bright blue sky, the sun just peeking over the tall stone wall to his left. The sky on its own had taken countless days of painstaking effort to perfect. But seeing the end result, seeing that beautiful sky that looked so real, made him forget just how hard it had been. The sound of little clattering metal feet approached from behind, and he knew what it was. The beetle blade cameras that were now spread all over the complex, ready to record every single thing that happened during the trials. He was going to ignore the thing until it jumped onto the back of his leg and crawled up his body.
"Ah!"
he yelped, and leaped into the air, twisting, reaching for his back, trying to swat the creature off. He spun in a circle as the thing scuttled all over his clothes, pecking his skin with those sharp legs. It reached his neck and latched on, digging in until it hurt.
"You were saying again?" Teresa asked.
He felt every morsel of her evil glee.
"That's a really nice dance you put on down there. Don't worry, I have it recorded, ready to show Newt and everybody else next time we get together."
"Not funny!" he yelled out loud. The beetle blade was knocking its head into his ear, right in a spot that hurt like crazy. Thomas finally got a grip on the metal body and flung the creature off. It landed on its feet and scampered away, disappearing into the ivy of the wall to his right.
"You win," he said. "I'm coming."
He tried not to smile, but he couldn't help it.
"Next time I'll send a griever," she replied. "Or worse, Randall."
He laughed, and so did she. One of those things he knew and felt without understanding how.
"Okay, I'm here," he said.
He'd reached the end of the corridor, which had a drop-off of about 20 feet to a black-painted floor. This was one of those weird areas inside the maze where the optical illusion technology wasn't yet complete, making you think you'd lost your mind. When he looked up, he saw a perfect sky. When he looked down, over the edge of the cliff, he saw a black floor that led to a black wall, the edge of the maze cavern. But straight ahead, the sky and the wall didn't exactly meet. The boundary between the two bounced here and there, blended and unblended, mixed and swirled. It made him dizzy and nauseous.
"Can you see the griever hatch?" Teresa asked.
He'd closed his eyes to keep his stomach from swimming, but opened them again. Somewhere in the middle of that crazy kaleidoscope of illusion and real world mixing together, he saw a shaft towering up from the floor below, with an open circle at its top. This was the hole from which the grievers would enter and exit the maze.
"I can see it," he replied to Teresa. "But it keeps swimming in and out of the illusion. It's going to make me throw up."
She didn't return a hint of sympathy.
"Let me know when it disappears completely."
He watched, squinting, hoping that would help his stomach. The image in front of him shimmered, went out of focus, bounced, then shimmered again. But soon the shaft of the griever entrance vanished from his sight, and as long as he didn't look down, the illusion of endless blue sky opened up before him. Now, instead of dizziness, he felt an overwhelming sense of vertigo, almost like falling. He took a step backward.
"It worked!" he yelled. "It looks perfect!"
She let out a big whoop, something he felt all the way to his bones. They'd been working on this section for a month, and now they were so close.
"Good job," he said. "Seriously,
What would these people do without us?
They'd need another few years at least.
Thomas stared at the vista before him, in disbelief at how realistic it appeared. As if the corridor of the maze ended in a cliff at the end of the world, at the end of existence.
I wonder who'll be the first one to see a griever, he said. And will they crap their pants? Should we bet on it?
He was surprised by the somber tone that rebounded back to him, and even more so by her words.
And who'll be the first to die?
They won't let it go that far, Thomas replied. There's no way.
Teresa cut off their connection without an answer. Chapter 30 229.6.12 10:03 a.m. Thomas couldn't believe the people who sat around the table. Every important person he knew or had heard about, and then some. Psychs, doctors, technicians, Randall and Ramirez and Levitt. Dr. Page sat next to Thomas and Teresa. Chancellor Kevin Anderson at the head of the table. Katie McVoy by his side. There were only two other teenagers in the room, Aris and Rachel. Even though they'd never met, Thomas knew exactly who they were.
Are they ever going to let us hang out with them? Teresa asked in his mind.
Thomas sent an image of himself shrugging.
I was just thinking that maybe it's a contest or something. Maybe they're hoping the two groups will do better if they're trying to do it first. What if there's a prize?
A lifetime supply of wicked T-shirts.
Thomas snickered under his breath. Chancellor Anderson cleared his throat to get the meeting started.
I'd like to welcome our lead candidates to their very first meeting of the Chancellor's Committee, an important step in their continued progress. Thomas, Teresa, Aris, Rachel, we're really proud of you. The work you've done during the maze projects has been phenomenal, just phenomenal. We pegged the four of you early on in this process as standouts, and we weren't wrong. Congratulations.
He beamed a smile that seemed about three orders too strong to be genuine, but Thomas imagined the man was under a lot of stress. Thomas looked at Aris, olive skin, brown hair, eyes sharp with awareness, then Rachel, dark skin, tightly curled hair, smiling. Nothing stood out about them, but they were instantly likable. Their faces were kind, and they had none of the arrogance or haughtiness that Thomas would have expected.
Now, Chancellor Anderson continued, it's been 10 years since the first inkling of Wicked was conceived by John Michael, and we've come a long way in our research since we began gathering those who are immune to the flare. The progress in those first years was slow, of course. Trying to understand the disease itself, testing our subjects to ensure that they were actually immune, learning about the virus and how it interacts with your bodies and your brains. Slow, but steady. Not a year has passed when we didn't have some kind of significant achievement, and I'd say that's better than anyone could have hoped for.
10 years, Thomas thought.
That seemed like such a long, long time to him. And they obviously weren't close to a solution, or they wouldn't be bothering with this whole maze thing.
Thomas, the Chancellor said, you have the biggest look of doubt on your face I think I've ever seen.
He offered another one of those goofy smiles. Thomas shifted in his chair.
No, I just... It seems like such a long time you guys have been working on this. I don't know. I guess it just hit me that it's not going so well.
Anderson nodded, lips pinched, as if it were a reasonable observation.
Dr. Levitt, you want to address that?
The bald man seemed eager to do so.
Read your history, son. I challenge you to find any kind of virus throughout the last few hundred years that was cured within several decades, much less one. Anything from the common cold to Ebola to HIV to the early stages of certain types of cancer. It's a long, long, long process. And those people didn't have a half-destroyed world with mind-sick cranks running around.
The fact that we've had the patience and endurance to work at this with a long-term strategy is pretty much a miracle. But even if there's only 10% of the population left by the time we do find a cure, at least we'll have saved the human race from extinction.
What about Munis? Aris asked. Could the human race continue if only they survive?
Dr. Levitt scoffed, then seemed embarrassed that he'd done so.
How many of those are going to survive a world full of cranks?
I really don't like him, Teresa spoke to Thomas.
Yeah, me neither.
Dr. Levitt's points are well made, Anderson said. We've done our best to gather the smartest people, the most advanced resources, and the best subjects, then ensured our protection from the outside world. We've planned for a long haul since we first began, and we don't plan to stop until an answer to this sickness is in our hands and ready to present to the world. And it should be no surprise to the candidates who are here today that we've been testing and running trials as often as possible since day one. Am I right?
Thomas nodded, even though he thought it was an odd question to ask the very people they were testing. In fact, the whole thing, having them there in the first place, just seemed weird.
Who knew? Maybe that in itself was some kind of test. One of the variables they always talked about.
The maze trials are very close to beginning, Anderson continued. And we've been prepping that for some time. But the progress we've made in the last few years toward our ultimate blueprint of the kill zone... He struggled to find the right words. I think we've laid a solid foundation through the smaller tests and trials we've accomplished with our subjects so far. The chances are slim, but maybe we'll have a blueprint after the maze trials. Who knows? Maybe we can avoid a phase two or three. I'm feeling optimistic today.
He paused, his gaze unfocused, as if his mind were several years in the future, imagining the perfect ending to what he'd devoted his entire life to. Next to Thomas, Dr. Page started clapping. Slowly, at first, until others joined in. Soon the entire room was clapping, the sound of it even getting Thomas a little pumped up. He felt ridiculous. Chancellor Anderson held up his hands and the clapping slowed to a stop.
All right, all right. That applause, of course, is for all of us. And for all those subjects in groups A and B. I really do feel like we're on the right path. I really do.
He smiled, seemed to gather himself, then let out a big breath.
Okay, it's time to get to work. We're a month or two, four at most, from sending our first people into the mazes.
Another one of his dramatic pauses. Thomas figured the man deserved a little moment in the spotlight after 10 years of work. Then he really began the meeting.
The trials are upon us, folks. Let's dig in.
Chapter 31 229.6.12 6:10 p.m. That night was the biggest change so far in Thomas's life. From that point on, Thomas and Teresa would be fully integrated with the other subjects of Group A, including meals, classes, and recreation time. It looked like slinking around would no longer be necessary. Of course, that wasn't the greatest gift in the world because most of Thomas's friends were slated to enter the maze with the very first group, sometime within the next few months. Ramirez, of all people, escorted Thomas and Teresa to their first dinner in the cafeteria, where all the other kids had been eating for years. When they entered the wide room, all stainless steel serving locations and long plastic tables and cookie-cutter chairs, the place went silent, every eye trained on the newcomers.
"Listen up," Ramirez barked, his voice echoing in the quiet. "Many of you have heard of Thomas and Teresa. They've been considered elite candidates for years."
"He's giving us a death sentence," Teresa yelled in Thomas's mind, the anger coming through like an electric shock. "What the hell?"
"Be nice to them. They've worked really hard," Ramirez was saying. "The maze trials are starting soon, as you're all well aware, and there's a lot to be done.
These two will be considered official liaisons between you subjects and the wicked personnel overseeing the trial preparation. We'll be assigning the entrance schedule to the mazes very soon. In the meantime, take the time to get to know Thomas and Teresa. Prepare yourselves mentally and physically, and let yourselves get excited for the fun changes ahead. Now, back to your meals.
He nodded stiffly, then turned and walked out of the cafeteria, not saying a word to Thomas or Teresa.
That guy's just a boatload of charm, Teresa said.
Before Thomas could respond, he saw Newt and Albie coming toward them, faces alight with big grins.
Well, look who the bloody copper dragged in, Newt said, pulling Thomas into a big hug.
He pounded his back a few times before letting go.
It's a bit strange seeing you without sneaking about and all. Welcome to society.
Albie had already hugged Teresa, and then they traded, Albie squeezing the breath out of Thomas.
Good to see you, man, the older boy said. Your head big enough with all that crap they're saying about you? What are you, the Chancellor now? No one here's going to like you much.
Thomas opened his mouth to respond, but someone half-tackled him from the left, almost taking him down. It was Chuck.
What's up, you little runt?
Thomas asked, mussing the kid's hair and the oldest grandpa move in the books.
Pretty much running this place is all,
Chuck said, puffing his chest out.
When I'm not sneaking over to Group B to get me some lovin' from the ladies, that is.
This made them all bust up, and Thomas couldn't stop until he saw Minho sitting nearby, looking unsure of whether he should get up. Thomas walked over to him.
Hey, man, he said. Made anyone mad lately?
Minho smiled, though he still seemed a little defeated behind his eyes. He was better, though, since the Griever incident. Thomas could tell.
I am a perfect angel, he answered. Sometimes I make up words around Randall. You should see him. He always acts like he knows it's something bad, and he kind of half laughs at it. Such an idiot.
Yeah, Minho was definitely getting better.
Tom, Teresa said, look over there, to your right. Galley.
Thomas glanced in that direction, searching until he found the black-haired boy who'd unwittingly caused all the trouble with Minho in the first place. Something was different about him, and it took a few seconds before Thomas figured it out. The guy's nose was about twice as big as it used to be, and totally deformed, like some kind of squashed vegetable that had been glued there, or worse, stapled. It looked painful. Galley's eyes met Thomas's, and surprisingly, the boy offered what appeared to be an apologetic nod that seemed sincere. But he quickly returned his attention to the friend sitting with him at his table.
What happened to him?
Thomas asked Minho.
His friend held up a fist. That's what happened. His loose tongue gave us up, I'm pretty sure. Probably bragging in the showers or something. Even if it wasn't his fault, it sure made me feel better.
Thomas expected him to laugh, or at least smile, but a darkness passed over his friend's face. Thomas just raised his eyebrows and shook his head. Albie, Teresa, Chuck, and Newt had joined them.
"Let's get you some food," Albie said. "It ain't the worst thing you'll ever put in your mouth. Then we got some catching up to do, people to ridicule, plans to make."
And for a little while, things like sun flares and cranks were all but forgotten. Weeks passed, and the official start of the trials grew closer and closer. Thomas found himself in the maze as often as possible, seeing it as a sanctuary of sorts. He especially loved the central living area, with its wide open spaces, its little forest. It was meant to become a place of rest and safety for those sent there. Wicked wanted most of it to be built by the subjects themselves, the farm, the gardens, the living space, probably a good opportunity to analyze their killzone patterns during such a productive time. Thomas felt a significant sense of pride when it came to the maze, and he wondered if he would ever be sent inside. He was madly curious about what it would be like, and every day he grew a little more eager for the actual trials to begin. Their lives needed a shot of change. But as the day of insertion grew closer, he remembered he had a promise to keep. And one night he told himself, tonight was the night. Although he had more clearance than before, he still felt a little mischievous as he made his way through the halls to the Group A barracks. He hadn't told anyone what he was about to do, figuring it would be better to seek forgiveness for something so harmless than to ask for permission in the first place. Most people were so busy, even during the evenings, that he doubted they'd be noticed anyway. Newt was waiting for him by the door.
"You actually came, Tommy,"
Newt exclaimed, probably only half kidding. Thomas always worried people were suspicious of him and Teresa because of their elite status.
"Yep," he replied. "I'm a man of my word."
They shook hands, and then the two of them set off, deep into the bowels of the wicked complex. Chapter 32 229.10.28 11:04 p.m.
"You probably know this place better than I even do,"
Thomas said as they made their way around a corner and quietly set off down another long hallway.
"With all the sneaking around you guys have done."
"Yeah, probably,"
Newt agreed.
"Well, I think I found a quicker way to get over to the Group B barracks, and less chance of being stopped by security." "Everything still look good?"
Thomas asked Teresa in his mind. She was helping out by guiding them through the least likely places to get caught. She'd studied video feeds earlier, and had made it very clear that Thomas would owe her big time.
"Yeah," she replied. "Go through that R&D lab I told you about, and you should be totally fine. There's an emergency escape tunnel at the far end that goes right by the barracks."
"Got it," he said. After a few more turns, they came to a secured door marked Research and Development, one of the many to which he'd never been granted access.
"It should be open now," Teresa said to him.
It was as if she were watching them in real time.
"And you should be fine on your way back. I'm going to my room and to bed. If someone arrests you or shoots you, too bad."
She cut off the connection before he could respond, but not before sending one last little mental image of a kiss on the cheek that she knew would embarrass him.
"Tommy," Newt whispered.
He'd hunkered down next to the R&D door.
"Wipe that bloody look off your face, and let's keep moving."
Thomas ignored him and pushed open the door, then quickly stepped inside the room, motioning for Newt to follow. Once the door was closed, they started to make their way across the lab. It was a large space, full of countertops cluttered with equipment and desks set up with workstations and monitors. The room was filled with glass containers and unusual machinery covered in an assortment of tubing and wires. The walls were hung with tools that looked like they belonged in a torture chamber from the Middle Ages. Gleaming silver metal, and lots of it was sharp. Thomas and Newt stayed low as they made their way down the aisle that cut through the middle of the huge room.
"What are they doing in here?"
Newt asked, his whisper sounding like a small explosion in the eerie silence. Thomas jumped at the sound, then stumbled. Newt tripped over him, and then they were both laughing, legs and arms tangled in a pile on the ground. They were either stressed or starting to crack up.
"Are you sure Wicket knows what they're doing with you?"
Newt joked as they picked themselves up and brushed themselves off.
"You seem a little more clown than elite."
Thomas was searching for something smart to say when his eyes caught an unusual sight. Hidden back in the darkness of the room was a glowing green mass. It was mesmerizing and strange, and he couldn't look away. Newt's smile faltered, then disappeared.
"What is it?"
he asked, looking in the same direction. There was a misty fog surrounding the lime-green light. Thomas knew he should walk away, keep moving, and find the hidden passage to Group B. But there was no chance of that.
"Let's check it out,"
he whispered, as if he might wake up whatever monster swam in the glowing goo. Together, he and Newt slowly walked past several desks and workstations, step by step, getting closer to the eerie light. As they approached it, Thomas saw that the glow came from a large green plate of glass, maybe 10 feet by 10 feet, covering a container that stood chest high. Wisps of white mist spilled out the edges and curled into the darkness of the room. Thomas leaned over the glass,